J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
Two businessmen from Switzerland have created a beer specifically for the homosexual community.
Ah, really?
Have you heard that?
Oh, yeah.
The beer is called Queer Beer.
Queer Beer.
And it's marketed by their company called Lemonhead.
Lemonhead,
yeah. So now we have a beer for homosexuals being brewed in somewhere in Switzerland. So what were the top 10 list tonight is top 10 slogans for the new gay beer.
I see.
Because...
That's it.
It's not enough that it's gay beer. You have to have a catchy slogan.
Yeah. I wonder how gay beer would differ from, heterosexual beer.
I have no idea.
Okay.
All right, now.
And the band has a few suggestions.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't repeat
I probably
that.
Better not know.
No.
Top 10 slogans for the new gay beer. Here we go. Number 10. For guys who don't like Bush. Number 9.
Never has there been such a reception for the 10th item in the top 10 list.
Yes. All right. At number 9, cold as a mountain stream, gay as a picnic basket. Number 8. Number 8, for all the gay stuff you do, this beer is for you. Number 7, made with the finest gay hops and barley. Number 6, toss one back and while you're at it, have a beer.
Again. Toss one back. I have an idea.
No.
I don't want to think about it.
Number 5, the perfect drink for spending the afternoon watching Trading Spaces with the guys. Number 4, come out of the closet and head for the mountains. Number 3, wreck your liver and your marriage. Number 2, drink until you can see straight. And the number 1 slogan for the new gay beer, the queen of beers. There you go.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
It's Monday, the 7th of June, 2021, here at jcontheline.com. Hi, I'm the JC described in the title. Oh, man. Oh, I was wishing that this was going to be true. If you saw the picture over the weekend of Donald Trump giving the speech, and then he's posing for pictures, and it looks like his pants are on backwards. If you've seen the picture, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you haven't, I swear to God, this has got nothing to do with politics. This just has to do with the human eye. All right, and you look at it and you go, the man's pants are on backwards, but Snopes already checked it out and they say there was a zipper on him. So some sort of weird optical illusion. For those of you who sprung for the $50, you're probably feeling pretty stupid right now. The Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Logan Paul fight went the distance in pretty uneventful exhibition. Floyd pretty much dominated, but he didn't have to work too hard. The crowd was unhappy. There was no knockout. We lost Clarence Williams III from colon cancer on Friday. He was 81. I can't tell you what a big deal back in the 60s this Mod Squad show was. First of all, Julie was knockout beautiful. Michael, whatever his name was, the guy, he had that curly fro, but I'm telling you, Link was cool. Name, Hayes, first name, Lincoln. I loved that show. Then he played Prince's father in Purple Rain. He was I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka, and also in Tales from the Hood. A day that changed the world. 46 years ago today, 1975, Sony introduced their Betamax video cassette recorder to the public. $995. Of course, Betamax ended up losing the home video war to VHS, none of which matters in the slightest anymore because the technology has already changed. But man, oh man, first of all, there was not a person alive who didn't want one of these things, whether it was a Betamax or the VHS thing. Man, I remember vividly buying my first VCR. I had just signed a contract to go to work at a radio station, Johnny Carson's old radio station in Omaha, Nebraska, WOW, and I got a big fat raise, and I went out and I bought my first VCR. It was $1,000, and I remember I bought a blank tape too, and that was $26 for one blank tape. But the other thing it meant is that I could drive in the dark of night from Omaha across the river over into Council Bluffs, which is where, number one, where all the strip clubs were, and also where they had a lot of adult video stores. And there in the privacy of your own living room, you could watch porn because you could rent the tapes. No longer did you have to humiliate yourself and do something like drive from Omaha to Council Bluffs to see an adult movie in a theater. It was so lonely in Michigan. Yeah, let's see, this would have been about 1978, I believe, and there was a movie theater down the street that showed adult films, and I would go in there every once in a while, and it was interesting because none of the men in there looked at one another. It's almost like when you go to a public bathroom, and you're standing there as a guy, and nobody looks at one another. Same thing in an adult movie. Ah, those were the days. And really, the reason that Betamax lost out to the VCR was because of the length of the recording time. The Betamax had a two-hour limit. The video and audio both were far, far superior in quality. But people were like, why do I want 2 hours when I can get 6 hours? And that was really the reason why, plus the availability of adult videos, which, for whatever reason, were more available on the VHS format than on the Betamax format. And as they say, the rest is history. Bob Welch died on this date 9 years ago, 2012, from Fleetwood Mac. He had been suffering from what they called an undisclosed health problem and left a suicide note, but also left a giant gunshot wound to the chest. You'll probably see this video all over the news today, all day and all night. A guy running from the cops in Florida needed to distract them in an effort to try to get away and was carrying a baby and wound up and threw the baby at one of the cops, and the cop caught the kid. I think this could have an adverse effect on this guy's visitation rights on weekends. I don't order food from any of those services that deliver the food to your house because I am absolutely convinced, and the reason I'm convinced is because I read the stories all the time, is that the drivers are eating some of your food on the way to dropping it off at your house. Now, if you work in a pizza place, you probably have easy access to free or heavily discounted pizza, so I don't know why anybody would do this, but somebody on TikTok showed how you can steal a massive chunk of someone's pizza without them knowing it. You just have to be the one who cuts it. Basically, they cut out a huge slice that spans the entire diameter of the pizza, starting at one side and going the whole way to the crust on the other side. Then they slide the two remaining chunks of pizza together, and yes, it's an oval at first, but once they cut it into slices, it's pretty hard to tell. And there's even a video on YouTube that shows you how to do it. Of course there is. Former Vice President Mike Pence turned 62 today. I wonder what he's thinking these days. I'd love to be a fly on his head. Good morning, everybody. According to a new poll, the cockroach is the most hated insect. The cockroach followed closely by Steve Bannon. Good morning, everybody. We got a big Cards-Cubs weekend coming up this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And also, it's a weekend where Busch Stadium returns to 100% capacity for the first time in quite a while. See, I watched the baseball games on the MLB app. That's the best way to do it, I think. And the nice thing about that is you don't have to worry if you forgot to set your DVR to record it, because it just automatically gets recorded. And it's great when there's a fight or something like that, the bench clearing brawl. If you want, you can actually go over to the opposing team's broadcast and listen to them describe it. And it's fascinating. I've always said this. I think you learn, I mean, you wouldn't do this every night, but I think you can learn a lot about your own team by listening to the coverage of the opposition. The hometown guys aren't going to really do much criticism or anything like that. They got to, you know, they got to cover these players every day. They got to travel with them. They're in the hotels and on the buses. They got to get interviews from them. So they really have to be careful. The opposition broadcast, they'll say whatever they want. They don't care. But I heard Mike Shannon do part of the game yesterday, and it is really, really sad. He sounds terrible. And I know he's very, very old now, and he's going to be retiring at the end of the season, but oh, good grief. I thought he sounded pretty normal last year. He does not sound normal now. And it's a shame, but I'm not really sure there's anything he can do about it. I hope he makes it the final 4 months of the season, because there were times yesterday when I was wondering if he'd make it to the end of the inning. This isn't a criticism or anything. It's just an observation. Considering he is a very, very big grouch, I have to say he's always been pretty nice to me. And speaking of sports, if you want to win a bar bet, try this one. The four NFL teams that have won every Super Bowl they've played in, all right? Think about it just a minute here. Four NFL teams that have played in the Super Bowl and won every single time they've been in. Those teams are the Baltimore Ravens, the Tampa Bay Bucks, they're both 2-0, the New York Jets, believe it or not, and the New Orleans Saints. Both those teams are 1-0. I mentioned this story specifically because people forget that for a couple of years, the Muni hosted rock and roll concerts. 85 on this date, Santana played the Muni. I remember sitting right next to Radio Rich at that one. And then the following year, on the same date, the Beach Boys played the Muni. That was the first time, John Stamos was in the band, I think, for the first time in 86. And I know exactly where I was on this date in 1997. It was another Batman movie out in Los Angeles.
The A-List Interview with JC and the Morning Show Graham.
Superstar actor George Clooney.
In what little time we have left here, sum up the Batman experience for me.
It's a great experience for me. Probably the rest of the world won't agree. For the studio, I'm sure disappointing, although it did make a lot of money. I think for me, creatively, I think the movie was in some ways disappointing, but I don't know whose fault that is, and it might very well be my own. But I had a great time making it, and I had a great time being part of a big franchise like that. I've never done that before, and that was exciting.
JC and the Morning Show, Graham.
I got a great interview out of George Clooney because he knew that I was friends with John Goodman. He's very, very close with John, and he knew about the whole St. Louis connection and everything like that. So he was just grinning the whole time. And I love George Clooney. I think the guy's got the right idea about a lot of stuff. Emily Ratajkowski having birthday number 30 today. I cannot even think straight when there are pictures of her that appear in front of me. Also, Michael Cera from Arrested Development and Superbad and all that sort of stuff, 33 today. Anna Kournikova is 40. Bill Hader, got to be one of the most talented people ever in the history of television, is 43 today. Liam Neeson, 69. Jenny Jones, 75. Tom Jones, 81. And by the way, still getting it done. He was a judge on one of those award shows recently, and he just started singing a cappella right there at the judges' table and still sounded absolutely incredible. And if you look around on YouTube, they're running clips of some of the old Tom Jones shows. He had a TV show, like a comedy variety thing, more variety than anything else. But, you know, he's sitting there doing duets with, well, you can't do a duet with four guys, but you know what I mean. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. He also did a duet with Janis Joplin. All that stuff is on the internet, on YouTube, if you punch around, look around enough for it. Is another one of those things designed to get you arguing with people at the water cooler. Total Guitar Magazine. Their readers put together a list of the greatest guitar riffs of all time. Purple Haze, Jimi Hendrix at 10. ZZ Top, LaGrange. Walk by Pantera at 8. Iron Man, Black Sabbath at 7. Enter Sandman, Metallica. Ain't Talking About Love, Van Halen. Smoke on the Water, Deep Purple. Dun, 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 dun. Back in Black, Crazy Train, and number one, Whole Lot of Love. My question would be, where the hell is Johnny B. Goode by Chuck Berry? That riff was so good that even a musical genius, Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, stole it. I think when they take these surveys, I don't think they, I don't even think they bother talking to anybody over the age of about 45. How in the hell do you leave out Chuck Berry, Johnny B. Goode? All right, never mind. Speaking of Chuck Berry, back in 1993, 28 years ago today, Chuck, along with Billy Joel and Pete Townsend, were among the celebrities attending the groundbreaking ceremonies for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio, which finally counts Alice Cooper, Deep Purple, and Rush among its members, and Todd Rundgren is going in, and it's about, what, 4 years ago. I was visiting some friends in Cleveland, Ohio, and I decided to stop by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Again, I'd been there twice before, and as I always tell everybody, you got to give yourself a good 4 to 6 hours if you want to really absorb what they have there, and maybe even more than one day in certain cases. But then, on top of that, you got to give yourself at least an hour or two to go into the gift shop. It is one of the biggest gift shops of any museum I can ever remember seeing, and also such an incredible variety of stuff. You can get blankets and shot glasses and silverware and guitars and framed photographs and autographed stuff and jackets and hats and pins and just more stuff than you could ever imagine. And again, to really do justice to your trip, you got to give yourself 4 to 6 hours in the museum and then at least another two in the gift shop. And we talked all of this over with curator Todd Messick, Vice President of Operations at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, today's JC Celebrity Interview of the Day.
It is a crazy job. And you can imagine that we can only have that item, the Mona Lisa. It's a sacred object. When you go and you see Lennon's guitar that he wrote Give Peace a Chance on, or the handwritten lyrics to Dylan's The Times They Are Changing, it's got to be the real thing, because people, there's an obligation. We don't just display artifacts. We curate so that we pick the right ones. They have to be authenticated. And then we also try to tell a story, just to give you, if you don't know, if you're 29 years old, you might not know the whole Bob Dylan story. So for that next generation, we look to make sure they do know why it's so important, try to connect it to something that's relevant today, and give them a deep experience. But there's some things that we have. There's a guitar we have not on display, but in our possession. And the curators are pretty sure that it's the real one, but they won't put it on display because it hasn't passed their litmus tests.
How many people do you have working on just that part of the operation alone?
So in the, I'm walking through the museum, the offices in my head, in the curatorial and exhibitions, there's probably about 10 people, and 4 or 5 of them dedicated towards collecting artifacts. And, they get them from a variety of sources. They get them from a collector, but often it's from the artists themselves. A lot of times you find it's from their mom. Mom keeps everything. She'll have T-shirts from high school. She'll have, the first contract. She'll have different things. So a lot of times it's from family members. But it's a variety of sources, but it's a long game. They have relationships with people. They build relationships so they know us and they have a comfort level with us, but also we know them, to make sure that it's not a fly-by-night operation or somebody that might risk the authenticity. But it's about 5 people that are going after artifacts.
When you say going after, that's the next question I had, and that is, how much of the stuff comes to you as opposed to the stuff that you actually have to go out and hunt down?
It's a little bit of both. What we try to do is, they're called curators because they're curating a story. So we're trying to not just accept what people have to offer, but to make sure that it fits with the stories that we're trying to tell. And, we have this Rock and Politics exhibit up there right now, and it's really timely because the RNC just left Cleveland, but also just timely because there's so many ways that music has in the past interacted with our political world, but lessons from the past, whether it's civil rights or the Vietnam War, now translate to things like what's happening in China or in the Middle East. So you can kind of take a little bit of perspective from the past and shine a little light on understanding what's happening today. So we'll try to collect things that make sense to the stories we're trying to tell. I think more and more it's becoming less about the quantity of items, but making sure we have the choice things. And then also now the museum experience is so much more than artifacts. It'll be a narrative from an artist like Bono or Tom Morello or Paul Simon telling the story, and then some other kind of supplementary thing, because people process museums or experience museums in different ways. There's some people that come in here that are just diehard fans. They know every album, they've read every liner note, they've seen every show, and we need to give them a deep tissue experience, stuff that they couldn't get anywhere else. Some people just want to skim the surface and just see that object, and then some people are somewhere in between where they want to swim around it in a little bit. So we want to make sure that the experience is multidimensional.
That's a big job to make all three of those groups that you just described happy.
Yeah, some people just want to see it, and they want to get, you know, go through real quick. Some people want everything. So between the videos, the display panels, some interactives that we put in, programming we have, we're even, you know, looking at how people that work in the exhibits behave and how they add to the experience. You know, a lot of people use the word interactive. It's thrown around pretty loosely. You know, when we talk about that in our you know, internal conversations, say, like, the most analog interactive you can get is a person. And that's what people want to connect with. So our people on the floor will look at you, maybe ask you a couple questions. Where are you from? What are you interested? What do you see? And give them a story, because, you know, if you and I walk around and I tell you a story about that guitar from Jimi Hendrix, it's a little bit more meaningful as opposed to you just seeing it on your own. So we try to give them, between the technology, between people, between different programs we do, give a full experience and really an understanding. So that people walk away understanding why this art form is so important.
Do you have some sort of credo or some sort of mission statement that you operate by with regard to what gets in here and what doesn't?
Yes, so the overall mission is to engage, teach, and inspire through the rock and roll. So, you know, we'll look at, sometimes it's about just those rock god artists that some powerful figure like John Lennon or Jimi Hendrix that really changed the game. Often we'll look for just the important objects. We don't want just anything. A lot of times we'll look to connect someone like that. Like if you look at our Elvis Presley stuff, that'll lead you to a conversation about Bruno Mars, because there's parallels there. And if your entry point is one of those artists, you know, if you're a Bruno Mars fan, you may get a better appreciation of where the music came from or where the whole show came from. And if you're an Elvis Presley fan, you might get turned on to something new. So a lot of it has to do with the ability for that artifact to fit within the context of the whole museum. But the bottom line, the criteria is there a story behind it? Is this an important artifact?
Well, this is where it's getting into a really dicey area here, because things are changing. Every year, the demographic moves, that bump moves further and further down, and maybe some of the really older artists, you know, start going into like things like Cream or the Yardbirds, and you start to wonder, is this stuff relevant? Well, of course it's relevant, because you're telling the history of rock and roll. And at the same time, you see the demographic of the people who are coming in here. They never heard any Yardbirds records. They probably don't have any idea who these people are. And then you look around, and you've got, you know, Madonna in there, Taylor Swift, which I think would probably surprise a lot of people. How are you dealing with the politics, I guess you would say, of what gets in here, what you feature, rock versus pop versus what is it? You know, you already have all the controversy that exists already about some of the acts that are inducted into the Rock Hall. This is a mess. How do you handle it?
It's like rock and roll. It's not clean. There's not nice, pretty edges. But when you look at what rock and roll is, if you ask people, you know, what's rock, it's easy to know where the center is. Yeah, the Beatles and the Stones and the Who and Zeppelin and Guns N' Roses, you know, moving up more in the modern era. And, you know, you could say a band today like Black Keys, yeah, they've got a rock sound. But it bleeds into a lot of different places. Rock is different from a lot of other genres because, you know, there's a gray space where rock and country overlap. There's a gray space where rock and jazz overlap. There's a gray space where
rock and pop.
Yes, certainly. And that's why rock and roll is a little bit different, because it's an amalgamation of a lot of different things. And if you ask people about it, usually they talk about rock and roll as an attitude, as taking something that came before, maybe mixing it up, making it something new, and that's been the history of rock. When you look at, you know, we did a hip-hop exhibit a couple years ago, and there are some hip-hop artists inducted, and that's really controversial for a lot of purists, because they say that's not music. But this goes for any kind of musical genre. People are saying, you know, it's not music. It's just noise. It's making our kids do bad things, whether it's drugs or sex, eroding the moral fabric of the country. And you rewind a little bit, wasn't that long ago that they were saying, these long-haired Beatles, just noise, making our kids do bad things. They said it about Elvis. They said it about jazz and R&B before that. And so when you step back, and that's a lot of what we're doing, is say, okay, so it's not that we just do a hip-hop exhibit in you know, out of context. But you say, like, Yoko Ono said if John Lennon was alive today, he would be doing hip-hop, because it's a new form. And there's a lot of these really hungry rockers are looking for the next sound. So whether it's EDM or hip-hop, or somebody like the Black Keys that are just like taking this raw guitar sound and going, you know, back a little bit and say, I'm going to do this, but do it my way. So when we look at rock, pop, and jazz, and all those things, you know, what comes next, it is really, we try to take the genre out of it a little bit, because, you know, where the edge is, it's really hard, and it's different for every person. But look at it like branches of a tree, or a flowing stream, that there's kind of this evolution. And that's hard for a lot of people, because they know what rock means to them, but it's going to be different for every person. So we try to tell it in the story, like, how does music change the world? How does music affect us personally? How does music become more than just entertainment?
How often do you get lobbied by either the artists themselves or PR people, publicists and stuff like that, who say, hey, you got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and you don't have my act in there. You don't have my client. You don't have the guy or the woman that I represent. Does that happen?
It happens, but not that often. What happens a lot is that we hear from the fans. You know, it wasn't long ago that the fans of, say, a band like Rush, diehard fans, really into their band. The band should be you know, inducted, and they feel it. You know, there's always somebody like that, the next one in line, saying our artist should be in. I think a lot of times for the artists, that it's hard for them to say anything other than it doesn't matter, I don't care about it. You know, that's the dignified thing to say. You don't want to say, yeah, it really stinks that I'm not there. Especially for, you know, we're not talking about an average band. We're talking about if someone's to the level that they're even being considered for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they're a superstar. And so a lot of times you'll have, like, Rush is a great example. Really great inductees, great ambassadors for the museum. They've donated stuff. They've you know, just a great just band on so many different levels. But for the years that they weren't inducted, they were it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And when they got inducted, they got up on stage and said, you know, we've been saying for a lot of years that this doesn't matter. Turns out it really matters. And that, I felt like a lot of us that work at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame felt like that, you know what, like, welcome to the family. Not that we would ever say anything else to any inductee, but you really appreciate that it's difficult for an artist that's waiting in the wings. But they'll, you know, the ones that are supposed to get inducted, they will get inducted.
What about research, focus groups, even just suggestions from some guy on the street or somebody who has attended the place and says, you know what, I really think you should do more of this? How often does it happen that somebody just off the street, for example, makes a suggestion and you guys sitting around this big table say, you know what, guy's got a point? For example, one of the things, and I'm sure this is the sort of stuff that drives you nuts, when people come here and you've worked so hard to put this thing together and somebody says, yeah, but you need more of this and you need more of that. For example, I was thinking, you know, of all of the one-hit artists, and there is a little display of that, but there are some incredibly iconic songs that sold, like, you know, 5-10 million copies, and those kinds of artists, you don't really see too much of an acknowledgement of that sort of stuff. But as it comes to the research and the focus groups and the things, even just, you know, the people, the ushers and the various people around here that say, you know, people are really reacting to this or this or this, whatever. How much of that gets taken into consideration in terms of what you actually see here?
Well, I think, you know, we're trying to create a culture where when somebody says, you know what, I was there, or I have a different perspective, or this is what I think, tell me is the answer. Sometimes we do that online, you know, digitally with the different networks or social media channels to bring their opinion in. When we open up when we do the induction voting every year, you know, the largest block of voters are living inductees from previous years. But we've now instituted a fan vote too, that people can go online and vote for their own people, because it is so much. It's not like other art forms, that it's more accessible and it means more to the average person than a lot of other things do. And so many people have such a deep personal connection to it that we want to take advantage of that and listen to people. There's a lot of people that maybe they think they have an artifact and they don't, but sometimes, you know, we will look at that stuff, and sometimes we'll certainly take whatever feedback, whether it's on the exhibits or who's inducted, back to the team. I had one not too long ago, a person came up with an idea for an exhibit. And, you know, usually when you ask the question, usually it's, you know, somebody says a certain act should be inducted, or you should do an exhibit on something like this. Most often it's something that has been batted around and at least discussed a little bit. So that might provide the impetus to bring it to the surface a little bit. But we'll always listen to what people are saying, because that's just, we live in a different world where, like, that authenticity and that connection to the customer is so important that we want to make sure that our people are always listening and try to take something from it.
Todd Messick, Vice President and Head Curator at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. As you make your summer travel plans coming out of the pandemic, I would highly recommend it. There's also a space center, very similar to our St. Louis Science Center, that is really right next door. And you could take in a ball game, too. Used to be the Jake, but the ballpark is right down the street. It's within walking distance, and people who head into Cleveland these days come back pretty surprised, because there are pockets of that city that are very, very cool. Restaurant districts, entertainment districts, just fun little touristy places and everything like that. It is definitely not the Cleveland of the 1970s, I can guarantee you that. And that wraps up another JC podcast here at jconline.com for, I already forgot the date, the 7th of June, 2021. Thanks for spreading the word. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.